comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to the Kevin Smith Show, whoever you are, wherever you are, all around this gorgeous planet we call Earth. Thank you for being here at the Kevin Smith Show. We're here because you have a right to know, and because you matter. Our new video galaxy opened up last night after the show, and I've been getting messages and emails from folks. The deal with messages, you wonder if I say messages and emails. If you are a member of our members community, you have direct contact with me through our private messaging system. And so I've been getting some messages and also some emails from people who have checked it out, and they love it. And I'm glad you do. There's more coming. We've got part of it open, part of it still under construction, more on the way. It's not just a little bit that's open. A lot of it's open. And people are loving it, and I'm glad to hear that. Talking about the members community, we have another free seminar coming up pretty soon. I haven't set a date for it yet, but it is coming up, and so you want to keep checking the announcements forum in the members community. That's where it will be announced. We don't keep it a secret, but that is the place where you go and find out what's coming up. It's all the inside information about what's happening here at the Kevin Smith Show in the announcements forum, okay? And welcome to our new members. Be sure that you read the new members info file. And it contains a lot of information in there that's not junk. It's stuff you actually need to know. So be sure you read that. We have, here at the Kevin Smith Show, we have something pretty cool. And it's free. A lot of stuff here is absolutely free. You can listen to the show absolutely free every night. And listening to the show is a great thing. I'm glad you're listening. But you get a lot more than just getting to listen to the show once you're into the members community. It's a whole different universe, believe me. We have another thing that's free. It is our free weekly newsletter. If you're brand new to the show, you don't know about that, and you need to know. It's called The K-Files. The K-Files is absolutely free. You can unsubscribe anytime you want to, and we don't share that mailing list with anybody. We don't rent it out, loan it out, lease it out, or sell it. It's just for the K-Files, so you're not going to be spammed as a result of subscribing. To subscribe, go over to my website, kevinsmithshow.com, and right in the middle of the screen, you'll see where it says K-Files. Just click that. Put your email address in there and click submit. Now, you're going to get automatically an email at that address. It will have a link in it that you have to use to activate your subscription. If you don't use that link, it doesn't activate the subscription, and you will not get the K-Files. You have to activate your subscription. Now, this is the way that we make sure that we don't spam anybody, all right? So get over there and click that link and subscribe, and then you'll be in the know and not in the dark. All right, we're going to step away for a couple of minutes here just for a break, and we'll be back. All right. right. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. This is Kevin Smith. And tonight it is going to be, I think we're going to have a lot of fun here tonight, learning some things we didn't know. You know, one of the things that you hear me say all the time is when there's a black hole in information, it draws me like a magnet. I want to know what information was supposed to be where there's a black hole. I'd like to know that, and I'd like to know why it has gone missing and who made it go missing. And in the case of our show tonight, there is a gigantic black hole for most of the world. And this gigantic black hole has to do with a nation, an area, and a nation called Mongolia. Now, this black hole was artificially introduced by the Soviet Union and also by the ruling Communist Party in Mongolia when they were in rule. And they were in rule from 1928 until 1990. In 1990, the people did away with communism as their form of government and opted for both democracy and a free market economy, and they adopted a brand new constitution and dropped the words People's Republic from the name of the country. It used to be the People's Republic of Mongolia. Now it is Mongolia. The black hole in the information, as I say, was artificially introduced. Most of them are. Most black holes in information are artificially introduced, and almost always they are introduced by some government or some part of a government. It could be the military, it could be the intelligence agencies, it could be a policy from the premier, president, prime minister, or whatever they've got. But usually a black hole in information is artificially introduced into the system. This one was. When I say Mongolia, probably if you know anything at all about Mongolia, it's from 800 years ago. You heard about it when you were in school. You've seen a few movies that had a character in it by the name of Genghis Khan. Now, you've heard of Genghis Khan. Well, he's Mongolian, and he died just over 800 years ago. And that's probably the extent of what you know about Mongolia. Mongolia is a very mysterious place. It's a very mysterious and paranormal place. And there is a lot of phenomenal activity in Mongolia. Now, I don't consider UFOs to be paranormal. Some people do. I don't. I think if you can see them, if you can photograph them, if you can get trace evidence when they land or crash, that's, while it might not be something we're used to, it's something certainly well within the range of our five senses and therefore very normal. So they have a lot of UFO activity over Mongolia, and if you go on the internet and search for UFOs in Mongolia, you'll find one site that I found had just report after report after report after report of UFOs in Mongolia. But they have a lot of paranormal stuff happening in Mongolia. Many of you have used the phrase Outer Mongolia. You've said things like, well, I'm not going to go to Outer Mongolia just to get you to do this. And you have no idea where it is. It was the extreme northern domain of the People's Republic of China, actually of China, for a long time. Before that, China was the domain of the Mongols. But in more modern times, Mongolia was the extreme northern domain of China. And when the People's Republic of China was formed, it was a fledgling government. The Soviet government, of course, had been in place for some time under Stalin, and Stalin had defended the northern Mongolian border from the Manchurian invasion and also the Japanese invasion. And so there was a kind of a close bond between the people of Mongolia and Russia. And the People's Republic of China realized there was going to be a big problem with Russia over Mongolia, and so they said, okay, we'll let them become independent if there's a referendum and the people there vote for independence. We will acknowledge it. And so they did. That's what they did. So they went independent. However, they went right from the frying pan into the fire, so to speak. They went, they simply went from the Chinese hegemony into the Soviet hegemony. And the Soviets enforced silence on some key issues. Now, one of those key issues that they enforced silence on is a key figure in today's world. But he's from 800 years ago. His name is Genghis Khan. Genghis Khan was not his name. Genghis Khan is a title. It means the great emperor. His name is actually Temujin. Now, when he was born into a sort of tribal nobility. His father was the chief of the tribe of Mongols in the tribe, the village in which they lived. He was the chief. And he was a pretty accomplished warrior, but he did get killed by the Tartars when Temujin was about 8 or 9 years old. Now, when Temujin was born, he had one of his fists clenched as he was born. And when they opened his fist, he had a blood clot in his hand. Now, the shaman at the time said, well, that means he's going to be a great leader and a great warrior. But then when he was 8, 9 years old, his father was killed. So Temujin returned to the village and to take up his duties as the rightful heir, as being chief of the village. And the men in the village said, nothing doing. We're not going to be ruled by a kid. So what they did, although he was the rightful heir, what these guys did is they put Temujin, his mother, brothers, sisters, half-brothers and sisters, out of the village and then left them. You know, these are nomadic people. And then they left them without any protection. And for a number of years, they had it very, very, very tough. Temujin and his siblings and mother were in extreme poverty and danger. And the only way they could survive was by eating wild nuts and berries when they could find them. And are you ready for this? The carcasses of dead animals that they found out in the desert. Mongolia is the home of a place you have heard of. It is called the Gobi Desert. You've heard of it. It's the largest desert in Asia. It is 1,300,000 square kilometers. It's huge. It's absolutely huge. And this is the way he had to grow up. The people of his village staged a coup, if you will, and left him and his family to die. And they came close. Well, we're going to cut to the chase. Temujin grew up, and, you know, you have to be very, very careful what rear you kick on your way to the top, because it may be the one you have to kiss on your way down. And that is the case. Temujin whipped everybody. They all paid. They all paid dearly for what they had done to him and his family. Now, you may be asking yourself, okay, that's kind of interesting, but what's that got to do with the genre of this show? Oh, trust me, it has much to do with it. Temujin became the chief. And then he started, he had noticed over all of this time when he and his family had been so ill-treated, he had been observing and learning. And he had noticed that all of these Mongol tribes, you know, they were all Mongols, but they would fight each other. And outside powers, like from China, would get involved and stir things up and encourage these Mongols to kill each other and so forth. So he saw all of that, and he said, you know, enough's enough, enough's enough, enough, enough. And so he started kicking booty and taking names and unified the Mongol tribes. There were two possibilities for you if you were a Mongol man. There were two possibilities in the face of Temujin. Become a loyal supporter and soldier, or die. Now, he was tough. I mean, he cut nobody no slack. Bad English, I know. But that's the way it was. And he united the Mongol tribes. And then he decided, all of these outside forces that have been causing us to kill each other are now going to pay. And so with his united Mongol tribes, and by the way, these are not little people, and they ride horses, and they ride horses better than just about anybody you've ever seen. They became fierce warriors, and they conquered half of the known world. Temujin, Genghis Khan. Well, Genghis Khan means the great emperor. And in about 1206, Temujin becomes Genghis Khan. He was the founder of the largest contiguous empire in history, folks. There has never, ever been another empire with connected, contiguous territory so large as the Mongolian Empire. Now, those who are watching our television channel are watching a map in motion here. And it has dates, and it shows you the size of the empire. At 1206, we're looking at the beginning, and at 1227, we're looking at the date when Genghis Khan died. But before his death, he put his sons and grandsons in charge of the empire. And they continued to expand it to the point that it conquered all of China, most of Asia, all of Russia, and a big part of Europe, the area we call Eastern Europe. It was the largest contiguous empire ever. There's never, ever, ever been another one quite that size. In fact, not even close. We think of China today as being massive, and it is. It was just a province of the Mongolian Empire. Another thing that happened with Genghis Khan as he was growing up is that he had time to do a lot of reflecting on a lot of things, and he his religion was shamanism. And he had a lot of time to do a lot of reflecting about how all this stuff works. One of the things a lot of people don't know about him is he was quite a student of history and quite a student of philosophy. He was an educated man. He is the one who chose the script that would be used for the written language of the Mongols, and he chose what is called the Uyghur script. It is now being taught again in Mongolia. Up until 1990, the official alphabet was the Cyrillic alphabet used by the Russians. It's still in use, but the Uyghur alphabet is being introduced into the public schools, and the children are being taught once again to read and write their language the way Temujin, Genghis Khan, had taught his people to. Now, a couple of weeks ago, I was out in Los Angeles. I was out there for the Alchemy event, and Ed Grimsley took me to dinner on two successive nights to a restaurant near the hotel. At this restaurant, I met two young people working there who were from Mongolia. One young man and one young lady. The young lady was very tall and almost shy. It's not quite being shy. I don't know how to say it. You just had to be there. It was really nice, though. The young man was very tall, much taller than the young lady, and much taller than me. And he was very outgoing, gregarious, a lot of fun. It was during dinner, having met these two young people from Mongolia, and seeing that they were very, very proud of Genghis Khan. The people in Mongolia view Genghis Khan as the father of their country these days. He's a national hero to them. But that's when I decided I was going to do this show that we're doing tonight. Because the information from this black hole has been rolling around in my head, and I've been working on it for a long time. The time has come. We'll be back.
Kevin Smith Show, and my IQ jumped 20 points.
And welcome back. All right, we've been talking about Genghis Khan, and I told you that I met two Mongolian young people, excellent young people, out in Los Angeles working at the restaurant where Ed Grimsley took me for dinner two nights in a row. Good restaurant, too. The reason that that sort of tripped the trigger for me was this. All of the stuff I've just told you about Genghis Khan, I knew all of that before I had dinner there. And when I asked them where they were from, because, you know, I've lived in a bunch of different countries. I've heard a lot of different languages. I know a lot of different accents. And this was just something I couldn't identify. They spoke excellent English, but with an accent I couldn't identify. And so I asked, and when they informed me they were from Mongolia, I was very, very happy to have met someone from Mongolia because I'd never done so. And I said, you know, I don't know much about your country, but I do know that one of your ancestors shaped the modern world, and both of them got big, broad smiles. Each, I talked to them individually, but both of them had the same reaction. Big, broad smiles. And both of them said, "You mean Genghis Khan?" And I said, "Yeah, that's right." They were very proud of Genghis Khan. He's a national hero. He's the father of their country. Under communism, they weren't allowed to talk about him. And they weren't allowed to talk about him for some pretty interesting reasons. He couldn't be mentioned. He was cut out of the history books. The kids were not taught about him in school. And part of the reason, of course, is political. In that one of the things that he did is he made all of the subjects of the Mongolian Empire equal under the law. Now, he was pretty ruthless. He really was. When he went out to conquer, he conquered. And under him and then his sons and grandsons, some 40 million people died. So I'm not saying the guy is a saint. But he was living in really brutal times and was fighting against some excessively brutal people. And I guess, you know, it doesn't excuse it, but at least you can understand. But he had some very modern views about some things. One of them was that everyone is equal under the law. Another thing was he set up standard weights and measurements for the empire. And another thing was religious tolerance. He himself was into shamanism. But he was very open and very open-minded and very open with people of other religious beliefs. And as a Mongol, you were allowed to have any religious belief you wanted or none. He saw your religion as not being any interest to the state. It was just you. Well, of course, we know that was not the Soviet way. He interviewed at length Buddhist monks and studied their holy books. He interviewed at length Christians and studied their holy book. He's quite a complex individual, Genghis was. But being into shamanism means that he was very open to and likely had experienced the things that we call paranormal. There aren't very many written records. There is a black hole in the information. But the things that we do know about him are that on the battlefield he was ruthless. As a ruler, he demanded loyalty. And after that, everyone was pretty much free to go do what they wanted to do. That was truly not the Soviet way. And the Soviet Union actually has spent, and they have quite a recorded history of spending, quite a bit of money and time and energy searching out and persecuting and even trying to purge from the Soviet Union people who claim to have paranormal abilities. They also, interestingly, spent a lot of money studying those people. It was sort of a dichotomy. They persecuted them, but they also studied them and wanted to know what made them tick. And, of course, we know they, from those studies, developed, before the United States of America did, something called remote viewing. And the United States of America development of remote viewing was in response to intelligence reports they had that said that the Soviets were using remote viewing, psychic spies. But the Soviet Union, you know, it really was kind of like a bear. You might could pet it today and it would eat you tomorrow. And that's kind of how they were with these people that had paranormal proclivities, and certainly Temujin would have been one of those. He could not be allowed to be a natural focal point for the Mongolians. He could not be allowed to be a national hero for the Mongolians because he just represented too many things the Soviet Union opposed. So let's move forward from Temujin. Let's move forward to 1926. In 1928, the communists took over. But in 1926, something occurred, something that is weird, it's strange, and in 1928, the communist government put a lid on this, and they would not allow people to talk about it. It is called the Mongolian Death Worm. Now, the Mongolian Death Worm was first sighted in modern times in 1926. We don't know of sightings prior to that. But it was first sighted in 1926 in the southern Gobi Desert in Mongolia. It's described as a thick-bodied worm about 2 to 4 feet long. That's a big worm. This creature is reported to be able to spray an acid-like substance that causes death instantly. Now, listen to this. It is also claimed that this creature has the ability to kill from a distance with some sort of supercharged electrical charge. Now, you might say, oh, that's nonsense. Nothing like that exists. When I first read this, I thought, that sounds pretty doggone alien to me. But listen to this. Numerous Mongolians have reported seeing this creature, including a Mongolian premier. The creature is reported to hibernate during most of the year, except for June and July, when it becomes active. Now, there have been several investigations into this. The Soviets, of course, did not allow groups to come in and try and investigate it. Those who are watching our television channel are looking at an artist's rendition of this worm. It's big. It's 2 to 4 feet long. You're looking at an artist's rendition, and it is said to be red in color. That's not a photograph of one of these because no one since 1926 has seen one. Now, when you go look up information for the Mongolian death worm, you're going to find articles that say that this is likely just sort of a urban legend kind of thing, but not urban. You know, it's a tribal legend among the Mongolians, the nomadics. And it's probably not true. It's probably, if it does exist, it's probably not a worm. And they give you some scientific reasons. And they say it's probably some type of unknown snake. Now look, people who live in the Gobi Desert, they know every creature that lives in the Gobi Desert. They know what a snake looks like. You know, this is that old thing. We've heard this nonsense from the elitist debunkers that sit here in their ivory towers and talk about people who report chupacabra down in South America. And they say, well, these are very remote places, and these are very, you know, sort of backward people, and they don't really know. And you've heard me talk about that. Now, look, people who live in the jungle, I've lived in the jungle. I've lived with people who are native to that jungle. They know every single creature that creeps through the jungle. They know what they look like. They know their habitat. They know their diet. They know their habits and traits. They know whether they're dangerous or not dangerous. They know their habitat. If they didn't, they couldn't survive in it. So you give me one of these ivory tower PHUDs. That's a PhD. You give me an ivory tower PHUD against a guy living in the jungles down along the Amazon. And the guy in the jungle says he saw a chupacabra and he describes it. I'm going with him every single time. The PhD can hang it on a tree. The guy that lives in that jungle knows the animals in the jungle. If he doesn't, he's dead tomorrow. The same thing is true of the Gobi Desert. The people who live in the Gobi have to know absolutely every plant, every animal, everything that's in that desert, or they don't survive. It's one of the harshest places on this planet. Temperatures range from above 40 degrees centigrade, which is 104 Fahrenheit, to minus 40. These people live in harsh, harsh conditions. They know every single animal, every bug, everything that lives in that desert. If they don't, they're dead tomorrow. And they say this creature exists. And when an investigation, an expedition went in after the fall of communism, they found lots and lots of first-hand accounts of people who have seen it. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking about some very mysterious stuff going on in the Gobi Desert. It goes all the way back to Genghis Khan, and you'll see in a moment a possible connection. Those who are watching our TV channel are seeing this picture of the Mongolian death worm. It's actually known as the Algoi Kerkoi. During communist times, remember, it was first sighted in 1926. The communists took over in 1928. And during communist times, it was illegal for the people to talk about the Algoi Kerkoi. Now, when I looked at that, I mean, we don't have, as far as I know, any records that tell us this Mongolian death worm existed at any time previous to 1926. The first time we know about it is 1926. Apparently, it's the first time the Mongolian people knew about it. It was right around 1926. And they've been living in that Gobi Desert. That's where this worm exists. They've been living in that Gobi Desert for centuries, and apparently it's something that was introduced to the Gobi Desert somehow right around 1926, the first time it was sighted, 1928. The Soviets put a lid on it. No, you can't talk about it. I say the Soviets, that's actually the Communist Party of Mongolia, but they were very, very, very close to the Soviet government, very close to Russia. And they put a lid on it. You can't talk about it. You can't talk about Genghis Khan. You can't talk about this Mongolian death worm. Doesn't that seem a little odd to you? I mean, it's a black hole in the information. You didn't know about the Mongolian death worm, probably. And then they can't talk about it? Why? Read its description again. Well, you can't. Let me read it for you. It is a thick-bodied worm, 2 to 4 feet long. It's reported to be able to spray acid-like substance that causes instant death. It is also reported that this creature has the ability to kill from distance with some sort of supercharged electrical charge. Now, folks, as bizarre as that sounds, do you realize that when the first Europeans came back from China and reported that there was this black and white fluffy bear, everyone laughed at it. Everyone said that's nonsense. It took 60 years from the time they first started going in there with expeditions to try and kill or capture one. 60 years before they succeeded in doing it. And today, you can't imagine that all of these smart Europeans thought that pandas were fiction. They did the same thing with the great apes, with the gorillas. People came back from Africa and reported in Europe that they had seen these things that looked almost like us, but they're gigantic and they're hairy. People in Europe, their attitude towards that was, yeah, you must have been drinking jungle rum. And today, every zoo in the world has one of these gorillas in their zoo. When the sailors talked about a serpent in the sea that had the ability to electrocute you, people laughed at it. They said it's, you know, the sailors have been at sea too long. And today, you can go to any major aquarium and see an electric eel. And they do have the ability to shock you. They generate electricity. So here's this Mongolian death worm. And those who are watching on television, as I've pointed out, you're seeing an artist's rendition in that red, big red long worm there. But the thing to the right of it is an actual photograph of the skeleton of one. So they haven't caught one. They haven't seen one alive. But they have found this skeleton. Doesn't it sound very alien that it shows up in 1926? It can spit venom that is acidic. It's sort of like acid. And it kills you instantly. Or it can stand off at a distance and shock you to death with some sort of electric pulse? If it was just a creature that was known to be in the Gobi Desert, why would the Soviets, why would the communists put a lid on that information? They didn't put a lid on any information about the camels that roamed the desert. They didn't put a lid on any sort of information about the wild horses or goats that roamed that desert or any of the lizards. Well, they did put a lid on this. Why? What did they know, or at least what did they suspect, about this creature that made them say, you can't talk about it? Well, it could be alien. It could have been some kind of Frankenstein experiment that the Soviets had somehow kind of introduced to the Gobi Desert a couple of years before they were in charge. I don't know. I don't know. It's a very, very strange, and I would have to say at this point, because we know so little about it, I would have to say a very, very cryptid creature. The people who live there, the people who live in the Gobi Desert, absolutely swear it's true, and they're terrified of it. They are so terrified of it that for many of them, they think it's bad luck to even mention the name Algoi Korkoi. And you just don't talk about it. They're absolutely terrified of this creature. Is it from this planet? If it is from this planet, is it natural or was it manufactured? Is it a lab creation? Apparently, the people in the Gobi Desert didn't know anything about it prior to 1926. And they've been living all over that desert for centuries. Genghis Khan apparently didn't know anything about it. He and his soldiers and his empire apparently had no problems being attacked by such creatures. There's no record of that. What is the Mongolian death worm? Is it from this planet? Remember, I told you there are a great many UFO sightings over the Gobi Desert. We're going to take a break. We shall return right after this. If I get the right buttons pushed, we'll be back. And we're talking about this Mongolian death worm. I know it sounds outrageous, folks. I know, because that's the way it struck me. I mean, it struck me as, when I first read about it, I thought, oh, come on. And then, when I started putting dates together, I noticed that this happened in 1926. That's the first time it's cited. And the lid goes on in 1928 when the communists come to power. And the lid stays on until 1990 when the communists lose power. Now the people can talk about it, although they're very reticent to talk about this. They're afraid to even talk about it. But they can now. It's legal. The researchers that went in and tried to find out information about this creature, found that, after several rounds of vodka, you could finally get them to talk a little bit about it. They were afraid of it. And like I said, the people that live in that desert know more about what's in that desert than the Pahuds sitting in ivory towers. They say it exists. There is a skeleton of the thing that has been found. But it sounds really alien, doesn't it? What is the reason this creature was singled out by the communists and the lid was put on it? Why did they make it illegal to talk about this? As I pointed out, they didn't make it illegal to talk about the wild mares that roam, the wild horses that roam that desert. They didn't make it illegal to talk about the camels that roam that desert, the lizards that roam that desert, the snakes that are in that desert. But they did make it illegal to talk about this. We started with Genghis Khan, but that isn't where my journey started here. My journey, I knew about Genghis Khan. I've watched documentaries. I've read books. I have admired many things about Genghis Khan. I have abhorred many things about Genghis Khan, but I have admired many things about him, considering when he lived and the conditions in which he lived. This was a rather erudite man. Bloodthirsty, but maybe no choice. Again, I'm not making excuses. I'm just saying, considering the times in which he lived and where he lived, there may have really been no choice. It was either that or be conquered. But that isn't where my journey began for tonight's show. My journey began in 2008. Because in 2008, there was an article published that I read. It had to do with the Gobi Desert. A few weeks ago, someone sent me a link to that article, and I read it again. I went to the Alchemy event. I came back having met some folks from Mongolia, and one of our members sent me this link again. And so I thought to myself, you know, there's got to be a reason this keeps coming up. So I sat down, worked the dates, looked at the fact that there was a black hole in information about Mongolia, about the Gobi Desert, huge black hole because of the communist regime that used to be in charge, and because of the Soviets who were their very close allies. There was a huge black hole in the information. And then a few things began to sort of click. A few things began to sort of fall in place as possibilities. Only possibilities, but highly interesting. So what was this article from 2008? It was an article from September the 2nd, 2008. I'm going to read just a little bit of it to you. You may be familiar with it. In the middle of the harsh and uninhabited Gobi Desert, on the border between northern China and southern Mongolia, explorers stumbled upon wreckage of ships and airplanes known to have disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle. How does that strike you? Now, back in the days of Genghis Khan, the story about the origin of the Gobi Desert was, and it still is among the Mongolian people who live out, that are still nomadic and that live out there in the Gobi Desert. The story was that it had at one time been a sea. It had been an ocean. In the middle of this was an island that was lush. And the Chinese came to conquer the ruler of this land, and he also was a shaman. And as he fled from the Chinese, he cursed the ocean behind him, and it shriveled up into a desert, leaving the Chinese to die from the harsh conditions. Now, I told you Genghis Khan was into shamanism. It is possible, I don't know that that story is true, and of course I'd have to say that would be pretty hard for me to buy, the story of the shaman cursing the ocean and it shriveled behind him. Some of you might buy it. I don't disbelieve it, but I don't believe it. I would find it very hard to buy. But I wouldn't find it difficult to buy that at one time there was an ocean there. There was a great body of water there, perhaps a freshwater ocean, a giant lake of fresh water, possibly. Out in the middle of the Gobi Desert, there is an oasis that is elevated and lush and fits the description of the island. So I wouldn't find it difficult to buy that at one time there was a great body of water there. The theory that is put forth by this article is that there is some sort of a vortex, some sort of a wormhole between the Bermuda Triangle and the Gobi Desert. They're on opposite sides of the planet, you see. And so there could be the Bermuda Triangle at one end of a vortex and the Gobi Desert at the other end. Quoting from this article, Roland Desmond of Cambridge University in England is quoted as saying, "It now seems that the Bermuda Triangle and the Gobi Desert are the two ends of a wormhole that runs through the Earth. A wormhole is a fissure in the fabric of space-time continuum. Ships and airplanes are swept into the Bermuda end of the wormhole and are transported to the Gobi Desert at light speed. They give the appearance of vanishing at one end and rematerializing at the other." End quote. He does go on to say physics has no explanation for the disappearance of these tragic victims. Now, what is he talking about? What he's talking about is ships and airplanes apparently have been found in the Gobi Desert that disappeared from the Bermuda Triangle, but no bodies, no skeletons have been found. Genghis Khan is a shaman, or into shamanism. It is just possible that Genghis Khan knew something about the powers of this vortex, although he may not have known to call it a vortex. He may have known that there was some sort of strange stuff going on out there in that desert. Because even though he talked with the top Buddhist monks, he talked with the top Taoist monks, he talked with the top Christian missionaries that came to see him and to convert him, and he learned from all of them. He learned and never gave an ounce of indication that he converted to any of them. Is it because he knew of some paranormal activity, some paranormal power out there in the Gobi? I don't know, but it's a possibility. Now, Genghis Khan invited the missionaries to bring all the Bibles they could and educate his people. He also invited the Buddhists to come and educate his people. When the Soviets got there, about 30% of the country were monks of one kind or another, mainly Buddhists. And they set about the business of destroying monasteries, looting monasteries, killing monks. There were 750 monasteries when they went in there, and they destroyed almost all of them. Buddhism allows for paranormal activity, very broad-minded about it. Shamanism is very broad-minded about, and in fact is based on paranormal phenomena. And this the Soviets shut down. Now you're asking yourself, so what has that got to do with anything? We understand why the Soviets shut down the Buddhists and the Christians and the shamans. They did that everywhere. They were intolerant when it came to religious freedom. Temujin was extremely tolerant when it came to religious freedom. And so Temujin's people, Genghis Khan's people, had many religions. And the predominant religions allowed for paranormal activity. The Soviets shut it down. Now you're asking yourself, okay, I see a connection to paranormal. So, they also shut down any talk about that death worm. Why? Is there something paranormal about this death worm? It does exist, as far as I am concerned. When you've got people that live in that desert absolutely swearing it exists, they've seen it, they know people that have died from it, researchers can talk to family members that have died from it, and villagers who have, knew people that died from it and witnessed it happen. When you've got all of that, this thing exists. And when you've got the skeleton of one, this thing exists. Now, those people say that it can spit something that's like acid, but it kills you instantly. If it hits you, you're dead. And it can stand at a distance and send an electric shock that will kill you. As weird as that may sound, those people that live in that desert swear it's the truth. And I will go with the people who have to live there over Pahuds anytime. Anytime. Like I said, I have lived in the jungle. I have lived with people who are native to that jungle. And if they say, don't step there, believe me, you better not. If they say, walk this trail, that's the one you walk. You pay attention because they know every leaf in the jungle. And out in that desert, they know every pebble of gravel in the desert. And they know what lives there. Now, think of the possibilities here. I wrote to, sent an email to a friend with a general sketch of the show that I... the information I was going to cover tonight. And the friend wrote back and said, "This is preposterous. I've never heard anything like this before." Now, I've already said this to the friend, so this is not a shock. But let me say, if that's your attitude about what we're talking about and what I'm about to say, it's preposterous. I've never heard anything like this before. This will be a shock to you. So what? Who are you? God? Well, you think you've heard everything there is to hear? You think you know everything there is to know? If we take everything that the entire population of this planet knows and we pour it into one big vat, that's not even a thimbleful. It's just microscopic. It's a microscopic little dot compared to what there is yet to know. So just because you haven't heard it doesn't mean it's preposterous. It's preposterous for you to say that. Like I said, so what? Who are you, God? You don't know everything. I don't know everything. There are mysteries in this universe and mysteries on this planet yet to be discovered. And this is one that a government made illegal to talk about. Now, here's a possibility. What if there is such a vortex between the Bermuda Triangle and the Gobi Desert? What if this vortex extends not just between the Bermuda Triangle and the Gobi Desert, but actually extends beyond the Earth? It's got two terminals, two depots, one in the Gobi Desert and one in the Bermuda Triangle. Is it just possible that in 1926 or thereabout, this creature from somewhere else out there got sucked into the vortex and deposited in the Gobi Desert? Is it just possible that there really is a civilization on the inside of the Earth? I don't know. I have to admit, I find it hard to buy into. But I find it extremely difficult to disprove as well. Is it possible, just possible, that there is a civilization on the inside of this planet? And if there is, there would, of course, be animals as well as plants. You have to have all that to have a civilization. Is it just possible that this creature newly discovered in 1926 in the Gobi Desert, with powers and abilities that have the most fierce warriors who ever lived, frightened to even talk about it? Is it just possible that that's a creature from inside the planet? They got sucked into that vortex and deposited in the Gobi Desert? Think about that. Just consider the possibilities. As I said, some of the articles that I read about this Mongolian death worm, some of the articles said it's all mythical. It's the people, you know, they're kind of primitive. They're a little backward. You think so? You go to the Gobi Desert and see how long you last. You think they're primitive? You think they're backward? You take your modern self over there and see how long you last. You put yourself in their environment and you're the primitive. They know how to live. They know how to survive. All you know how to do is die. Put yourself in their environment and you're dead. But not them. They know how to survive in it. That's why when they say this creature exists, I'm sure it does. That's why when they say they're afraid of it, I'm sure they are. And when they say, when they described it to the researchers, they described it down to small details. They've seen it. And they've seen it kill. If you haven't seen it, you couldn't describe it down to the small details. And look, the people, they would talk to people in a village, and the researchers would, and they'd get a description of this creature. And they'd get down to the small details of this creature. They'd go to another village many miles away across the desert, talk to people about this creature, who would then tell them down to the small details what the description of this creature is. And they would be the same. Same details. Same description. This creature exists. I don't think there's any doubt about it. It exists. If it didn't, how did they get that skeleton? If it didn't exist, how did these people in all these different villages, how were they able to describe it down to small details and give the same description if they hadn't seen it? And they all described its same method of killing. It either spits this substance on someone, or it stands off at a distance and generates an electrical shock. Bizarre? Yeah, so is an electric eel. So is a bat with a 6-foot wingspan. I've seen both of them. Ate one of them. Well, folks, this Mongolian death worm is not where the story started for me. The story started for me with this article about the Bermuda Triangle. The ships and planes winding up where? Gobi Desert. They somehow strangely seem to go together. We'll be back.
And you are smart because you are listening to the Kevin Smith Show.
And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're talking about some mysterious stuff happening in the Gobi Desert. I would like to invite you to join the conversation here this evening. And you do that by giving us a call. The telephone number is 623-444-5889. And if you're outside of the USA and you're outside of Canada, you can call that number, but we know it can be expensive to make those international long-distance calls. So for you, if you're outside of the USA and Canada, we have an additional option. You can send us a flash message. The flash message link is on my website. You simply go to my website, scroll down till you see the picture about tonight's show, and right above that picture, you will see the link. It says flash message. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Jerry from Las Vegas.
Hello, Jerry.
This show went on an unexpected turn from what I was expecting from the description, but that's very interesting. What I think is what could be interesting is, do you think that this portal could somehow connect with Mars, because this Mongolian death worm sounds something similar to the like worm-like fossils that we've seen on Mars that you've shown in pictures on previous episodes of the Kevin Smith Show.
You know, Jerry, I had not thought of that, but I, now that you mention it, I mean, anything is possible, you know, and it very well could be. I can't see that a vortex would just end at the Bermuda Triangle. It would seem to me that it would extend further out into space. And I can't see that it would just end in the Gobi Desert. It would seem that it would have to extend further out into space. So maybe it is.
I totally agree with you, and I think it could be a natural vortex, because it would seem to be on ley line intersection points on the planet that somehow are connected.
Yeah, yeah. Now, I've said, and I don't expect everybody to agree with me, not at all, but I have said here tonight that as far as I'm concerned, because of the way we do have the information about this death worm, I'm convinced that's real. But what do you think about it?
I think the Mongolian death worm is a real creature, and I think it could possibly be a descendant of an alien creature somehow brought here from Mars.
I had not even considered that possibility, but I think that's an excellent possibility. It apparently had not been known in the Gobi Desert prior to 1926. So it would be very interesting if we could find out what kind of strange aberrations took place in 1925, 1924, up to 1926 in the Gobi Desert. But there's just not any information available about it.
Well, unfortunately, Kevin, I really don't know how to get information out of the Gobi Desert either.
Yeah, but, you know, it would seem if it was brought here from somewhere else through a vortex, there must be something that took place in 1924, 25, 26, somewhere right along that period of time that was pretty aberrant. And somebody must know, but apparently, there's no record of it. There's, you know, once you get to 1926,
I wonder what the
it starts shutting
computer
down.
Programs, if you could run back the sky charts and see that alignment that was unique at that time.
There's a good idea. Now, I don't have one of those. Do you happen to have one?
No, I don't, Kevin, but I'm sure going to try and find one now that I have a reason to want one.
Yeah. I'd be very interested in finding out what happened. And let me say this, if we have any astronomers listening tonight, and I know we do have astronomers that listen to this show, do you know of anything that happened in 1924, 25, or 26 that was astronomically aberrant? That would be interesting to know as well. Jerry, thanks for the call, man.
Thank you very much, Kevin, and I will await the other callers.
All right, thanks. Yeah, now see, I hadn't thought about that. 623-444-5889. I hadn't thought about that at all. Perhaps it is a creature sucked into a vortex that extends from Mars to Earth. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Victoria from Washington. Hey, I'm enjoying your program, and I'm just kind of recalling high school history.
Uh-huh, yeah.
It's been a real fun, reminiscent evening, and I've learned a lot of new stuff I never knew. But I just wanted to let you know that they have a giant earthworm in Idaho, of all places. I don't know if you've ever heard of it.
Yes, I have.
You have.
I have.
About a foot long.
Yeah, I've seen them.
And a couple of years had it because they went searching for it. It's kind of a rare thing, but it doesn't spit poison or any or kill or anything like that. But I, you know what? I bet it can catch a pretty big fish.
I would imagine. That's what you use if you're fishing for whale.
Or a really big or salmon or something like that.
Yeah.
We have those around, too. But they're up on the Palouse in just kind of south of the University of Idaho, so they did a study on them. But nothing like yours. I just thought I'd throw that in just for a little levity. But enjoy your show tonight. Thank you very much, Kevin.
All right,
good night.
Thank you. Good night. Yeah, until a few years ago, this giant earthworm that she's talking about was something that nobody had heard of. And now, yeah, it's an established fact now. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Jerome from Pennsylvania.
Hello, Jerome.
Hi. Back when Genghis Khan was alive, the Mongolians were all nomads, that's correct?
Yeah, but some of these tribes, they were nomadic, but some of the tribes had sort of semi-permanent villages. They weren't actually permanent structures, but they were sort of semi-permanent, and there are some stone structures in the Gobi Desert that appear to be permanent structures.
And then when he united all these different tribes and had that the greatest area that they controlled. Like you said, it was the largest area.
Uh-huh.
But back in 1926, by that time, didn't that area shrink back to a very small area that is now, you know, right under Russia and north of China? It dwindled back down in size.
Well, yes, it dwindled back down. I wouldn't say it's a small area. The Gobi Desert itself is bigger than some countries. So, and that's not, the Gobi Desert doesn't take up all of Mongolia. It takes up a huge part of it, but not all of it.
Those two Mongolian restaurant workers that you met,
yeah,
what's the modern Mongolian person? He's no longer nomad, is correct?
No, that's not correct. They are both. They do have a capital city that is pretty modern, and they have nightclubs, they have theaters and cinema, and, you know, it's a city. And so the people that live there are very much part of the modern world. But once you leave the capital city...
Mm-hmm.
And there's about a million people that live there. Once you leave the capital city, you are into nomadic country for the rest of Mongolia.
No.
And by the way,
yes.
the airport in the capital city is called the Genghis Khan International Airport.
That's obviously after they got their freedom.
Yeah.
Here's my whole point of this. The Soviet Union, when in 1926 or whenever they took over in 28, mm-hmm. if there was a vortex in the Gobi Desert, well, it was under their control. I would think that they would have some type of permanent base there, a military base. That, you know what I'm saying? If they would have discovered one ship or one airplane that was lost during the Bermuda Triangle, I would imagine when the Soviets were in control, they would have had an establishment there.
Well, they did, and one of their bases, their main base, they had 55,000 troops there. They had some outposts as well, but they had a base with 55,000 troops there.
Well, that, you know, okay, that kind of shot my theory through, because I was thinking that if there would have been a vortex, they would have never left the area. But I just can't believe that there is this giant worm and a death worm. And because, like you said, the people who live in that area, you tend to believe those people.
Yeah. I believe country people when they talk about country things. I believe city people when they talk about city things. I do not believe city people when they talk about country things.
The PhDs.
The PHUDs.
You know what else also? I would say that it seems like the modern Mongolians are freedom-loving people. And boy, they're between a rock and a hard place.
Yeah, they are. Life there is very tenuous. They're trying very hard to have democracy and free market economy, and it's tough, 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 tough for them. But they're trying very hard to do it. And if there's anything that you can say about the Mongolian people that'll be absolutely true every time you say it, it is tough doesn't matter to them. It doesn't matter how tough it is. If that's what they want, they're tough enough to do it.
Well, thank you, Kevin. Once again, you had a very interesting show, and I appreciate you accepting my call.
All right. Thank you for the call. 623-444-5889. All righty. Let me check the flash messages very quickly. And let me see what I've got. Oh, I've got several here. Ross in the United Kingdom, superb show. Wherever that death worm came from, I bet that part of the reason it was forbidden to talk about was because the Soviets were trying to learn its biology and how to make weapons from it. Bet you you're right. Caller, can you hang on through this break?
I can.
All right, you hang on. We'll get to you right after this break. We'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. Let's go straight to the telephone. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
John from Mesa, Arizona.
Hello, John in Mesa, Arizona.
Hey, I was fascinated by your worm.
Yeah?
As much as I'm in science, I think you're the first let me know about that. I thought it was interesting that we have giant worms in movies, Tremors.
Yeah.
I don't remember any of the actors or the stunning act of some kind of electrical charge, but they were definitely large worms.
Yeah, I remember that movie. It's a pretty scary movie. Almost facetious, but still kind of scary. Huge worms, and they responded to vibrations.
Right, yeah, I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
I was curious that the PHUD, as many of them as there are, into geology and archaeology, wouldn't have gone to that information about the just those artifacts that had disappeared in the Bermuda Triangle showing up in the Gobi Desert.
Well, it was actually an archaeological expedition that found them. And then it all went quiet after one article.
Exactly. And so, I mean, it goes back to the discussion we've had on numerous occasions about hidden knowledge and those in control of that knowledge and where it might be stored.
Well, on the Gobi Desert, there is definitely a gigantic black hole. And I would say it's a black hole of information, at least as big and dark as the black hole of information about Antarctica.
True. You know, anytime you've got ice, you know, 2 miles deep, that from the descriptions have formed a igloo or a bubble of protected environmental look down there, that would be very interesting.
Yeah. All right, John, I want to thank you for the call, man.
You bet. Always good to talk to you.
All right. Bye-bye. Let me read a flash message that's come in. This is from Captain Rob in the Netherlands. He says, I think the worm is real. I was told the Soviets were after its acid. Most common American fishing worms, earthworms, use acid to move underground and electric pulses to find their food. So it's not unthinkable to think that one worm could be huge or unseen. And he continues, Destination TV shows like Destination Truth have looked into the landworm, as Quest magazine and many others, and they found more truth to the subject than just legend, like huge burn marks in stones with human shapes, where it was claimed by a local tribesman that men had been electrocuted. I think there's something to the story. And that's from Captain Rob in the Netherlands. Look, something weird is happening in the Gobi Desert. It apparently has been happening at least since 1926. It's something that caused the communist government to put a lid on it. And it's strange. It's weird. And that's what we talk about. We talk about the land of the strange and the unexplained, the realm of the strange and unexplained. Now, this creature, whatever it is, I am convinced it exists. I'm convinced it exists because at the moment on our TV channel, I am looking, as are those of you who are viewing, at the skeleton of one of them. Does it have the properties and the abilities that the tribesmen out on the Gobi Desert say it has? Well, why would you not believe their story? Because it sounds preposterous? You never heard it before? Let me put it to you this way. There was a time before you had kissed the opposite sex. You learned to do that, didn't you? So just because you never heard of this before, that has absolutely zero rational bearing on whether it's true or not. I mean, that's just ridiculous. Now, it is an amazing story, but you've got tribes people, nomadic people, Mongolian people all over the Gobi Desert, who told the researchers who went after the fall of communism in 1990, they went there specifically looking for information about this creature they had heard about. And you have these tribes people who gave information from many, many different villages, information that was virtually identical to what they got in other villages, down to small, fine detail. So I'm convinced. I don't have any problem with, I mean, I can't say that I know that this thing exists, but I'm convinced these people are telling the truth. They've seen it, and they're telling you what they have seen and what they have observed it doing. Now, just because you don't have them in your backyard, and you should be glad you don't, but just because you don't have them in your backyard, that doesn't mean they don't exist. I mean, you don't have a duck-billed platypus living in your backyard either, unless you're in certain parts of Australia, Tasmania. But they exist, don't they? Imagine when people first started talking about having seen this furry creature that has a bill like a duck. People outside of the area where that creature lives scoffed at it. They didn't believe it. But it's true. It's a mammal. It has a bill like a duck. So just because we haven't seen it, that has absolutely no bearing at all. None. Zero. Zip. Nada. Nama nishta. It has no bearing on whether it's true or not. Now, like I said, when country people talk about country things, I take their word for it. They know. That's where they live. They know. When city people talk about city things, they know. If I'm in New York and somebody says, look, don't go down that street after 4 p.m. Okay. You don't have to hit me in the head with a 2x4 to get my attention. If you're from New York and you tell me not to go down a particular street after 4 p.m., I'm going to take your word for it. You live there, you know that street. And if you live in the Gobi Desert and you tell me that this thing exists and that it has the abilities you've described, all right. I haven't seen it, but okay. I absolutely buy your story. Now, this thing about the connection between the Bermuda Triangle and the Gobi Desert, we have to look into that some more. My friends call me Steel Eye, and my enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time. So long, everybody.